Welcome, welcome, welcome to Reaching New Heights with Troy Bell, City Manager, City of Muskegon Heights, where you get to know what you need to know so you'll be in the know. Welcome back, everybody. And again, thank you for all the people who are tuning in, clicking in, and listening in. And thanks for the comments and questions throughout the week. Today, you are getting 100% Troy Bell. No special guest today, no community or small business highlights. Because I wanted to make sure that we took some time to cover the additional questions that we got from our previous meeting, our previous segment. So I want to make sure that if we have those questions, that we get time to go through them. And so let's go ahead and jump in. Just a few quick announcements to start us off. Just a reminder, we are in the middle of our Blight campaign, which is Beautify the Heights, Fight the Blight. That kicked off in April. Hopefully you've seen the billboards up and around. And if you have, please send me a note to say that you saw them so that we know that they're out there. That's the first part of our campaign. The second piece to our campaign is the yard signs. And the third piece to our campaign was the postcards. So just to let you know, I've got a sneeze that's lurking around here, so it keeps coming and going, and hopefully it'll stay away long enough for me to finish the show. But and the fourth piece is radio announcements, radio advertisements, because just to reiterate, if you've missed previous shows when I've talked about this, we are doing a full-scale press on cleaning up the community, and we understand that it's not just about the individuals who are putting in the blood, sweat, and tears, the sweat equity to keep their properties clean. But we want to reach out and touch those people who may not otherwise be inclined to clean up. So if you see somebody dropping trash, encourage them to pick it up. If you're out and about and you see trash, if you've got gloves on or a plastic bag, pick it up and put it in a trash receptacle. What we're asking is for everybody to join together in going above and beyond the minimum expectation of keeping your own area clean, but let's reach out and keep the rest of the community clean, realizing that a number of the issues that we have are with people who come in from outside the community. So in some ways, we're preaching to the choir, as they say. And what we want to try to do is raise the bar and set the standard so that when other people come in from outside the community, they think twice about dropping trash. They think twice about dumping or leaving tires around. So this campaign is to heighten the awareness not only of our residents, but also to heighten the awareness of those people who are coming into the community from outside. And just a reminder on that, if you see somebody coming in from outside the community, or I should say, if you see anybody dumping, there is a reward courtesy of 1037, $1,000 for the information that leads to the successful prosecution of somebody who's caught dumping in our community. So that April campaign is off and running. So if you saw the billboards or if you got a postcard in the mail, if you picked up a sign, one of our yard signs, please shoot me a note in the comments section so that we know, so that we know that you actually did receive them or you saw them or you're participating, because I'd like to hear that feedback from the community. So that's our Fight the Blight update. Oh, one other thing I should mention, a number of the community organizations are coming together to put together a collaborative effort of cleanups. I want to thank Mr. Morrow again and Mr. Davis for leading this initiative. We had a wonderful meeting with the Community Foundation, with United Way, and with a number of other organizations, neighborhood associations, other nonprofits, the other day. And I really feel like the energy and synergy is there about a real full force, broad scale cleanup of the community. And I should mention the work that the Community Coalition is doing and has done for a number of years. Those folks get out and work. I see them putting in the elbow grease on a regular basis, working to keep clean up areas of our community that are outside of their personal residences. So that's amazing. Most of those folks are retired, and the fact that they put in the work is amazing. So thank you to them. Thank you to everybody that participated in that meeting. If I missed mentioning you, I apologize, but I'm excited about what's going to happen with our cleanup moving forward. Next, I want to remind people that the second and fourth Mondays of every month is our council meeting at 5:30 p.m. You can come in person or you can participate via Zoom, preferably come in person. So that is the second and fourth Monday of every month. And so this Monday we have coming up a council meeting. And so if we have time near the end of the show, I will go into some of the items that that we will be discussing or that will be on the agenda for the council meeting. Next, just some reminders on dates. Juneteenth is fast coming upon us, and that's the June 17th, 18th, and 19th event. We expect that we will be able to incorporate collaborating with the Rotary Club, Muskegon Rotary Club, with our annual, well, it's been postponed or canceled the last 2 years, but the annual mixer event. So we are planning to have that mixer event on Friday, the 17th in the evening. So excited about that. And then we've got entertainment scheduled for that event, as well as Saturday, culminating on Sunday with more entertainment and food and the fireworks show. So please put that on your calendar. Be sure to set time aside for that. And don't forget the Black Expo on Saturday. I believe that will be the 18th. We'll be going on downtown. So we want to make sure that we support that initiative as well. Upcoming is our dumpster days, May 7th and May 14th. I know that people have been hotly anticipating the dumpster day. So if you got stuff that you need to clear out, you can take it down to DPW between the hours of 8:30 and 4:30 this Saturday, as well as next Saturday. If you you can take advantage of this free service if you are a resident. So you need to bring proper identification showing that you are a resident of Muskegon Heights in order to be able to dump your items down at DPW for free. So make sure that you have that documentation before you come out, and take full advantage of it, because we want to make sure that there's no reason that you have anything to put out on the curb, because we want to make sure that our terraces are free and clear of dumping this year from April all the way through to the end of the year. So if you got stuff that you know you need to get rid of and you can't send it to Goodwill or you can't put it on eBay and you just need to send it to the dump, your free day to do that will be Saturday, May 7th, as well as the following Saturday, May 14th, upcoming days. So May 7th, clear out your house on that Saturday and make mom proud, because May 8th is Mother's Day. And we are working hard to make sure that if you have loved ones that are up at Mona View, that the cemetery will look presentable in time. It's a hard road to haul because we had a rough winter, but our mowing contractors are doing their best to clean up and clear up the cemetery so that when you get out there, if you're going to commemorate somebody in the cemetery on Mother's Day or any day following Mother's Day, we want to make sure that you have a pleasant experience. To that note, I'm excited to announce that we are working together with Wimserdick in putting together a GPS logging of all the plots up there, which is a really neat initiative where you can go online and be able to see the location of the gravesite of a loved one and all the information associated with that. And it's a neat GPS tracking app that allows you to use that if you're trying to locate the grave of a loved one that you may have forgotten exactly where it was or never been to the gravesite, but know that they're buried there. And this system would be able to direct you to that location with minimal difficulty. So that project, we're just about to kick that off. And so that's coming down the road. So you'll hopefully be able to use that sometime this summer, if not first thing in the spring, once that project is completed. Followed up then by the Memorial Day weekend in May. And so there is on the 28th a number of events. I believe that we have a block party at the US Cafe. So excited about that. And so I'll be providing additional information about events that are coming up at my on the show next week. So tune in for that. Festival in the Park in July. And then in August, every Friday in August, prepared, put it on your calendar, save the date for the Street Fest, Friday Night Live Street Fest on Broadway. And that is where we will block off from Peck to Baker Street. And we'll have food, music, beverages, and that will be from 5:30 to as late as 10. But at dark, we'll transition to Rowan Park, where we'll have movies in the park with our giant inflatable screen. So we're excited to plan for that event every Friday in August. And if weather permits, we might push that into September as well. But that's a new event, a new project, if you will, to highlight the public spaces in our downtown area and bring people down to realize the value and not only of the space, but of getting together and sharing that time, breaking bread, sharing that experience together in Muskegon Heights, because we are the city of friendly people. So with that, I think that wraps up the announcements for now that I wanted to do of upcoming events and items of note. And I want to jump back into the topic that we started from the end of our last show, which is roads. And so there's been a continual conversation about the roads in Muskegon Heights. And I had an opportunity to share some information with local press about what we're trying to do. And that was some of what we talked about last week. But I want to reiterate that we're dealing with the frost, now that everything's thawed. The results are, and I don't need to tell you, but potholes everywhere, pothole here, pothole there, potholes everywhere. And that comes from the water freezing and thawing through the winter, gets down in the cracks. And when it freezes, it swells and then breaks up the pavement. And we're working with 20-year-old end of life roads. And so that's to be expected if we don't crack and seal, if we don't do long-term pothole patching throughout the years of the life of the road. Starting from the day that the road is newly put in, there is a maintenance required in order to extend the life so that you don't have to completely rebuild every road. You can just mill off the top and then repave it, and you still have a good road in place. But when we get to the point where we have these potholes that go down into the base of the road where the gravel's coming up, the dirt's coming up, the rock and the sand is coming up, at that point, when you have numerous holes like that, we just have to rebuild the whole structure of the road. So we are at the point where a number of our roads are failing. In some places we don't have roads in place at all. It's down to the gravel course. And so we are struggling to be able to address that. And we appreciate, I know I've heard some complaints and justifiably because it is a rough road to haul, pun intended, but I do appreciate the residents that have reached out and said, hey, you know, get to it as soon as you can. We understand that the city's in a structural deficit, and we understand that it's not about a lack of attention to these things. It's about a lack of resources. And so bear with us for the near future, because now that we have hot patch, the plants have opened up starting April 25th. The work that DPW has done to temporarily fill these potholes, which is really an effort in futility, because we put the cold patch in and 2 or 3 days later, it's right back out. And it really does nothing on a permanent basis to address the difficulties with the roads. But now that we have hot patch being produced at the asphalt plants, we are actively pushing that that hot patch out. And so the patches that we're doing are lasting, and they should last throughout the year, not like the cold patch when you put it in and it comes right back out. So in order to augment the efforts of patching, which is still a band-aid in many senses, we are still in need of a long-term solution, which is paving all of reconstructing all of our roads and repaving them. But in the short term, the hot patch will hopefully get us through. And so we own two kettles. The kettles are the devices that we tow behind the truck that heat up the asphalt before we put it into the pot, before we clean out the potholes and put the patch in. And as I had mentioned in the previous show, those kettles have really been in pretty poor condition. So we've worked on rebuilding those kettles so that they'll operate more efficiently, get the patch up to 400 plus degrees, which is what you need in order for it to bond and fill and retain that connection to the existing pavement, the bonding with the existing pavement. We are adding a third kettle that we are bringing in to be able to do at least more in the beginning to try to blunt the edge of these the numerous potholes that we have out there. So in a word, thank you. Thank you for being patient. Thank you for bearing with us. Thank you for understanding that this is not a lack of attention or care. It is a fundamental structural deficit that we're dealing with. This community was built to support. The infrastructure is built based on the idea of 5,000 homes. You've heard me say this before. We have 3,700 homes. We're in the whole 1,300 homes, so to speak. And so until we address that structural deficit, we're going to struggle to address long-term capital needs like roads. We do have a road millage, and that question came up over the week. What's happening with the road millage? And I apologize to the folks that have tuned in and have heard this before, but for those folks who haven't heard it before, we have a 4 mil street millage for local streets. That 4 mil nets us about $360,000 a year that is dedicated to local streets. And so the question was, what are we doing with that $360,000? Unfortunately, we're not Norton Shores. They have a 2 mil road millage that brings in somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 to $2 million. That's based on their larger property and higher property values. But in Muskegon Heights, that 4 mil only brings in $360,000. What does it take to pave a road? Well, if you look at the project that's underway at Delano, that was a full road reconstruction, and that is approximately 4 blocks, and that is $700,000 plus. So our 4 mils is not going to take us, it's not the solution. Again, it's a band-aid. It is good that we are actually able to do a full reconstruction, because now if we maintain those roads properly, then that will extend the life of it. But at the rate of 4 blocks, actually 2 blocks, we were able to do 4 blocks this time because of the fact that we were using 2 years worth of millage, because we weren't able to do a road reconstruct in the previous year. So we had that money from the previous year and last year together, which gave us the $700,000 in order to do this project on Delano. We have another project that's kicking off on Leahy, which was part of the bid package for the last year. But because of the price that came in, we did not have enough money to be able to do both. So that project is already engineered and is out to bid, or is going out to bid here this month. So we should be able to kick that project off middle of July. So look forward to that. But again, that's where the four mills is going. If we were to operate just on four mills a year, just on $360,000, and of course, that $360,000 should go up as we begin to build new houses, as the property values continue to go up. That 360 should become 365, maybe 370, 380, but it's not overnight going to be $1 million or $500,000. It's going to gradually tick up incrementally. And so we have to be prepared for that. But if we were to depend only on that to repave our streets, we were talking about 250 years in order for us to repave 50 to 60 miles worth of road. So that cannot be the solution. There was a question about American Rescue Plan. The American Rescue Plan money that was allocated to the city, that is a decision that is up to the city council to decide how to allocate those funds. A portion of those funds is already designated for the deficit elimination plan, which was required by the state as a result of the 2020 deficit. But the remaining funds that weren't used for COVID-related expenses will have to be determined by the city council. Now, with that amount of money, the original award was $10,684,772. That is not enough to put a dent in the roads in Muskegon Heights. So the council will have to make a decision whether or not to utilize those funds for economic development, for building houses, those types of things, or in many words, it's a drop in the bucket in terms of the solving the streets problem. We need a much more comprehensive, long-term, sustainable solution for our streets. And that is going to depend on us getting rid of the structural deficit in our tax base. That is where the sustainability is going to come from to be able to get our streets to the condition that they need to be in. And I've said it once and I'll say it again, we need to build new houses. So I'm excited about the project that's about to kick off this month, if not the beginning of June, for building 17, the developer that purchased the 17 lots to begin building new homes. Our overall goal that I set out there for a city, and it is a big, hairy, audacious goal of building 50 homes a year, and understanding that we're shooting for that as an average. We may not hit that in the first year, but over a five-year period, we want to make sure that we build 250 new homes in Muskegon Heights. And I'll come back to that, but that is the solution that will get us out of the structural deficit, that will give us the tax revenue, that will allow us to maintain the infrastructure that we have in this community. So the one-time money of American Rescue Plan money is not the solution. It is just a Band-Aid. So those decisions will have to ultimately be made by council as to how to spend those funds. But in the meantime, as I mentioned, strategically, what we're doing is we're using grant money that is awarded for replacing pipe, water pipes and water lines, and focusing the replacement of those pipes and those water lines in areas that also need new roads, because the funding for replacing those lines comes with funding to address the roads. So if we open up the road, pull out the pipe, put a new pipe in, close it back up, that grant money covers repaving that road, rebuilding and repaving that road. So we're piggybacking off of those pipe projects in order to do some of the paving that we need. Now, is that going to address 50 miles worth of paving in Muskegon Heights? No. It will address 5-6 miles. So that is one way for us to begin the process using grant funding, since we don't have the funding available to really make a dent with the four mills, that we put that work that we do at the four mills together with the grant money that we get for pipe work. And that begins to address some of the paving issues. I'm sure it's not going to go a long way, but strategically that's using the money that we have in a way that serves multiple purposes. So we are looking to address some of the street issues by that. The additional method that we're hoping will come through, we have asked the legislature to step up and grant us $8 million to repave Broadway from Glade to Getty. And so that is focused on our downtown area, so that we can begin to attract new businesses to fill in the gaps in our downtown retail district, as well as because that road, in addition to Sherman, is a major access point for the industrial parks, to be able to then attract the industrial business that we are lacking in our industrial parks. We have a well-established industrial park on the west side, and we have a grant, $100,000+ grant, to put together an industrial plan for our industrial park on the east side. And that contract for that plan should be awarded here in the next few weeks. But we're excited about that. That's a $100,000 grant, I believe, that will come back with a project plan and a design for industrial park and a plan for recruiting and attracting new industry to Muskegon Heights. In particular, we're focusing on water, since our water plant is operating on about 10% capacity now. We have 90% of our capacity to produce water that's not being utilized since we're no longer serving those other communities. So we want to bring industry in that is water intensive, whether it's a bottling company, a beverage company, a microbrewery, or food processing, all those types of industries that are water intensive will allow us to take advantage of our competitive edge in having water. So I'm going to pause there, and I see a couple of comments coming in. Nobody has mentioned that they've seen the bulletin board, the billboards yet. So if you have seen the billboards that are up, Beautify the Heights, Help Fight the Blight, please just click on and type in a message to let me know that you have seen that, or any of the yard signs that are around, or the postcards. So the first question up there is from Ms. Nash Blackman. How does the city decide which streets to address? Very good question. It's a question that we get quite often. We put together on a biannual basis a rating of the streets in Muskegon Heights. Most communities do that. It's called a PACER rating, and they're rated from 0 to 10 to identify the condition of the roads. If you had the opportunity to tune in last week, we had one of our road engineers, consulting engineers, on with us, who talked about what is meant by that PACER rating. 0 is the worst condition, 10 is the best condition. And based on the ratings of all these roads in Muskegon Heights, the ones that are the worst, rated as 0, are put on the list, which is a vast majority of roads in Muskegon Heights. And then from that list of roads, council has an opportunity to weigh in and decide where we will focus that those funds as part of the local four mill street millage. That was the process that was used to identify Delano and Leahy. And so after Leahy is completed, we will have to identify another street for the next project. And so at some time throughout the course of this year, we should be in front of council with that same PACER rating list of roads. And they'll have an opportunity, council will have an opportunity to identify which road that they would like to select for the next $360,000 expenditure. We also have funds that come in from the Michigan DOT as part of the WMSRDC technical committee. And those are the funds that were used to do streets like Park Street. Those funds were also used to do sections of Hackley. So those projects come with state money, and there's a local match that we have to pay. But that's one way of gradually addressing the issue with the streets. So the long answer to a short question is, we look at the PACER rating, we prioritize based on the worst roads on the PACER rating, and then council has an opportunity to decide or direct, if they choose not to decide, or to direct the city manager to identify the streets that he or she thinks is the ones that should be addressed. Let's see. Thank you, Ms. Vines, about your comment about having a plan is important, and for the point by point recap. So I'm glad that that was helpful. The next question from Ms. Aubrey: did all citizens have a chance to voice input on the funds were spent? I am not sure if you're talking about on the road selection process, but so if you can clarify that, I can come back and answer that. Which funds were you referring to, the road selection funds, or were you referring to the expense of other funds? So let me know what you mean by that, and we can come back to that. So the last area was that I was touching on was grant money. Funding that was coming from other sources. We are hopeful that the infrastructure bill and the billions of dollars that were identified in that will also give us some relief about road projects. I'm optimistic about that, but it is a challenge because from what I understand, based on the way the federal bill was written, those funds will be pushed down to the state, and the state will push those funds out through their normal mechanisms of funding that are competitive in nature. So we at Muskegon Heights will be competing with cities like the city of Muskegon or Lansing or Grand Rapids and Detroit for funds, access to those funds to do infrastructure projects. The criteria for how those funds will be doled out is not clear. But what we have been told is that will be a competitive process. And so those cities that typically have more resources are the ones that are able to best access those funds. So we may be at a disadvantage at going after those funds because we don't have a staff of grant writers. We don't have a grant writer that's on staff. And so it's going to be challenging for us, not impossible. It's going to be challenging for us to compete against these other communities that are much better staffed and have access to more resources to put together the applications, the proposals for these types of funds that are awarded on a competitive basis. But that's don't count us out. We've been successful in getting over, I think we're somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 million worth of grants over the last 2 years. And I went through the grants once before, so don't quote me on that exact number. But if you have a question, I can go back to it and get it for you if you want to know the exact number. But we have been successful cobbling together our resources to be able to go after a number of these grant opportunities. We're waiting to hear back from DNR on a grant proposal. We're waiting to hear back from FEMA on a grant proposal for our fire trucks. So we're still in the battle. We're still in the fight. And hopefully when the infrastructure bill comes, the funding comes down, the guidance will give us a fair shake at going after those funds. Let's see, make sure I'm not missing any other comments. I think so. Please explain and encourage the community of what we can do in point of unity for positive change. We got to begin to take some point of ownership. And so I think what you're saying, Ms. Aubrey, and again, thank you for being active and commenting, is that you know, our ability to be able to bring our community back and to be able to participate in the renaissance that's coming. Because like I've said before, the renaissance is coming, whether we do something about it or not, it's coming. The only question is whether or not we're going to be here to benefit from it, to participate in the renaissance. And that's what we want to be strategic about. That's what we want to be intentional about, to make sure that the people that have shed their blood, sweat, and tears in this community are here and part of that renaissance, that the fiber of the community stays intact as we increase the quality of life. And to do that, we all have to come together as a community. We have some wonderful people in this community, and all we, and I don't want to trivialize it by saying all we need to do, but what we have to do if we're going to maximize our opportunity is to work together, to collaborate. Because when you have limited resources, it doesn't make sense to take that $1 and tear it into two different directions. And as a result, you get 50 cents worth of work done. And it doesn't even look like a dollar was spent because it's such a minimal effort. If we come together as a community and work together as a community, we can make a profound and sustainable impact on everything that we do. And I think that's what Ms. Aubrey is getting after, getting at with her comment. The Renaissance is within our grasp. It is right there on the verge in this community. And you, if you'll hear the mayor say that we're on the verge of a breakthrough or a breakdown, because we are right there on the edge. And if we reach out and work together to grasp the opportunities that are in front of us, we can appropriate a breakthrough. We can embrace it and ride the wave through. And that's one of the reasons why it's important with the housing project that I've talked about, reaching new heights, that we create that bridge so that the people who are renting can transition from renting into home ownership. And that'll give me an opportunity to go back and talk about the home ownership thing. So there's been some comments about Muskegon Heights building houses in Muskegon. That's a myth. Muskegon Heights is not building houses in city of Muskegon. The city of Muskegon Heights is not paying for the houses to be built. And I don't know where that rumor came from, but that's not the case. The city is not giving anybody money to build houses. What the city is doing is encouraging builders to come in and build houses on our terms. And the terms that we've given them is that we want to make sure that we give an opportunity for people in this community to be at the table first, to transition from being renters to owners, to be able to generate that generational wealth, to create that generational wealth by taking them from a position where they're putting money into somebody else's mortgage or somebody else's pocket and putting that money into their own mortgage, into their own equity, into a piece of property that's going to increase in value year after year after year. That is what that bridge is that we're talking about. Down payment assistance, credit repair, homeownership mentorship. Those are the terms that we have given to the builders and said, hey, if you are about community like you claim you are, you're about investing in communities, you need to meet these minimal standards, come in here and build new houses and create opportunities for people to transition from renting to owning. And also for people who are owning that may want to size up or size down, we want to create those opportunities for the people who live in this community. So the city is not paying these builders. These builders are building out of their own pocket, with the hope of being able to sell these properties. The other aspect of what we're asking them to do is use local labor. So train up people who can participate in the construction process and who may be in a position based on working on these projects to actually purchase the house that they worked on, that they helped construct and help build, because those are the types of wages that we're hoping to generate. So I hope that touches on what Ms. Aubrey was looking for. If you have some other questions or if you want to clarify that, please go ahead and add additional comments. So that's where we are with the roads. That's where we are in a brief discussion about the budget. And I will come at, we've talked about the budget here before, but I think it's important to understand, and I want to bring up a graphic on the budget, where we are, because we are poised to spend approximately $8 to $9 million in a year cycle. And I think it's important for the community to know where that money is allocated. And it's not being thrown away or washed down the drain. It's not being embezzled or stolen. What we have to realize is fundamentally we have 3,700 homes and we need 5,000 homes to be able to make a run at it. That's the key. You know, what we're dealing with now are legacy costs of pensions, of retirements, of insurance, of equipment costs, of facility costs. That's where a good chunk of our money is going. And then you look at the cost of staff. You know, the two biggest budget areas, and I'm just going into this briefly, but I want to come back with a graphic to lay that out so you can actually see it. So you're not just hearing me talk through it, but that you can see it. Our biggest budget areas in terms of staffing are the police department and the fire department. And I don't see any way that that we could even recommend or think about reducing our staffing. They're not overpaid. Then in most cases, they're underpaid and overworked. So the idea that we reduce any of those, the fire department or the police department, would be a blow to public safety. And we are moving in the right direction in both of those areas. And so we have to understand that that is the bulk of our staffing costs. And that is something that we have to maintain in order to make sure that this community is safe. And so if we were spending money or there were exorbitant salaries, then I could see that point. But we are in sync with other communities, if not below the communities around us in terms of what we compensate our staff for. So that is not the area that we have to look at. And quite frankly, that's 52-53% of our budget right there is staffing. And the majority of that is police and fire. So that is a non-starter discussion, but we'll come back to that. Something else I want to talk about today as we wrap up with the last 15 minutes is a presentation that was made to council. So looking at areas that we might be able to become more efficient, reduce costs, and improve effectiveness is in the management of our fleet. We have a number of vehicles in the police department, vehicles in the fire department, vehicles in public works, and that makes up our fleet. Our fleet is aging, old, out of repair, and in some cases, we are spending more money trying to keep those vehicles on the street than it would cost for us to purchase a new vehicle. So we have to be strategic in understanding, you know, yes, it might cost us $15,000 today to fix this. For us to buy a new one, it would be $28,000. So by fixing it, we save $13,000. You know, and on the surface, that might look like a smart decision. But the fact that we fix something with $15,000 does not pay off when 2 months later, that same piece of equipment or vehicle will cost us another $10,000 to fix something else on that vehicle. Because at some point, everything on a vehicle is going to fail. It's just a matter of when. And our vehicles are at the point where they're at that catastrophic failure. So we can fix it and think that we're saving money, but we're actually wasting money in the long range. Because that $15,000 today, $10,000 tomorrow, another $8,000 a week or a month later could have purchased us a new vehicle that would last us a year, 2 years before we had to pay anything in maintenance. So realizing that we have to be smart about the way that we spend our money on a fleet that's out there, and particularly our fleet, because just like your vehicles are taking a beating with the potholes and the road condition, our fleet is doing the same. So we identified this fleet management solution as a way of lowering the age of our fleet. And by lowering the age of our fleet, strategically reducing the cost of maintenance, the cost of mileage, and taking advantage of the state purchasing process to be able to buy the vehicles at below cost, and putting that together in a whole strategy to upgrade, renew, and refresh our fleet. And so Enterprise Fleet Management, this presentation was done before council on an informational basis, and we'll be coming back to council for consideration and approval. But I'm going to jump ahead to this diagram here. Hopefully you can see that. And what you see in the orange line there is that, you know, when you buy a vehicle, it depreciates almost immediately. And as it depreciates, the fuel efficiency reduces. And as you can see with the blue line, there is an escalating cost of fuel, because as the vehicle gets older, it doesn't maintain that that mileage rating, so you don't get the same miles per gallon. So the cost for every mile, for every gallon goes, every mile goes up, because you have a less efficient fuel efficiency for the vehicle. In addition to that, you see in the green line that the cost of maintenance goes up as the vehicle gets older. So from left to right, as the vehicle gets older, the cost of maintenance goes up, the fuel cost goes up, and the value of the vehicle goes down. And at that point, that's in the circle in the middle there, is that intersection where all of those things, the increasing costs meet with the decreasing value. And understanding that on a managed and strategic basis is what more efficient fleet management systems address. I'm going to skip ahead to show this. I'm not sure how well you can see it on here, but roughly what that is showing in the orange line there is that we spend about $265,000 a year in managing our existing fleet. $265,000 a year. And what we can accomplish with a fleet management system where we buy new vehicles at below market cost because of the state purchasing process, and we put them in a maintenance program that extends the life of the vehicles and keeps them in good condition, we can reduce that cost from $156,000 down to an average of about $170,000 a year, which is roughly just under $100,000 of savings. Part of that savings is achieved by selling off the older vehicles, and we had Enterprise come in and take a look at our fleet so that they can make sure that their estimates on the value of our vehicles was accurate, and they confirmed that their estimates on the value or salvage value of our existing vehicles was accurate. So as we sell those vehicles off and we purchase new vehicles at below market cost, we're reducing the cost of our vehicles on the road. And by keeping them in a maintenance program, we're reducing the cost of long-term maintenance, and we're increasing the long-term fuel efficiency of the vehicles. So by doing all these things, we should be able to refresh our fleet so that we have newer vehicles that we keep for a shorter period of time. And so what we have been doing is we buy a car and we put that money into it and we run it into the ground. So by the time we've run it into the ground, there's little or no value left in it. And the maintenance costs have skyrocketed, like I showed you on that previous slide. And the fuel efficiency has been shot. So after its prime or its peak, we're now paying more for that vehicle than if we had purchased a new vehicle and gotten rid of that vehicle. And so what this fleet management system does is it says, okay, we purchase a vehicle, we keep it for 3 or 4 years before it reaches that point where the expenses exceed the value. and then we sell that vehicle, recoup the value, the remaining value of that vehicle, and then put that that we got for selling the vehicle back into purchasing a new vehicle and recycling the fleet, as opposed to holding on to it forever and ever, thinking that we're saving money, when in effect we are losing money because we are not being strategic in the way that we manage our vehicles. So if you have any additional questions about that, the presentation that they gave is available. Let's see if I can show you this so that you can see that. This is pretty much the same. So just to give you a sense of the communities that they work with, here's a list of other communities that they do the fleet management system with. That has been a cost savings for those communities. So that option is available to us, like it is available to those communities. And I know it's a change in culture because we haven't done this before, but we can't continue to do the same things the same way and expect different results. We have to be innovative. We have to begin to be strategic in the way that we handle our assets. And as you can see from this table, if it's too small, please reach out to me and I can get you copies of that. But we're talking about out to 2036, we would be averaging a savings of about $25,000 to $28,000 a year in savings each year over that 30-year period. And the nice thing about it is we realize the savings from day one in the program. Once we get in the program, from day one, we're saving money. And that money is because of salvaging the older vehicles. And eventually it balances out to an average of $26,000 a year. But it will reduce our costs. It will give us a more efficient and effective fleet that's operational, so that guys are not and ladies are not out there driving around in vehicles that have broken windows or no heat or no air conditioning that do not reflect what our city wants to look like. We're talking about Fight the Blight, Beautify the Heights. This program will allow us to represent that in visual sense with the newer vehicles that will save us money day one and over the long range as well. So I wanted to introduce that to you on the show today so that you have an inkling of what we're talking about at the next council meetings. And if you have questions, please reach out to me. I'm happy to share with you the document that I have on the screen here today and go through any questions that you might have about how we are proposing to address a deficiency in our assets in the community to save us money and be more effective at our jobs. So that is where we're at with that. And I will save the budget piece since we have about 4 minutes left. The budget graphic for our next show, I'll squeeze that in with any guests that I have for the next show, and we can continue that conversation. But I want you to have as much of the information as I can give to you through this format as possible, and also give you the opportunity to come in, make an appointment if you want to drill into more of the details about how these things are being addressed, handled, or how the decisions are being made. So thank you so much for tuning in today, for clicking on, for watching. I made it through the whole show without sneezing. I do want to remind you that we are still testing on Thursdays from 2:30 to 5:30. So if you need to come in, and you should come in and get tested for Corona, it's a free test. You do need to bring your insurance card. This does not affect your copay in any way. It's still free. You just need to bring your insurance card with you at City Hall from 2:30 to 5:30. And I also want to make you aware that coming up is the Purple Maze event, which is my fraternity, Omega Psi Phi Fraternity's fundraising event. And if you're interested, please reach out to me for tickets. I have tickets for the event. I believe it's coming up on May 8th. Gosh, I need to double check that to make sure I have the right date. But I'll make sure that I get the word out on that. But reach out to me. You can contact me at City Hall if you're interested. And it's going to be a great event. Lots of good food, lots of good entertainment down town. So reach out to me if you're interested in getting a ticket for that event. So that's going to be exciting. And again, thank you for tuning in for Reaching New Heights with Troy Bell, the city manager, City of Muskegon Heights, where you get to know what you need to know so you'll be in the know, and continue to be blessed. Thank you to 103.7 The Beat.